What's up, sports fans? Welcome back to another episode of Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm your host, King Kaz. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great, JVZ.
Welcome, everybody. We took 2 weeks off, so we wanted to squeeze this episode in there because we're probably going to take next week off as well, so...
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we missed and a lot of stuff that is currently going on that we just kind of wanted to take a moment to sit down and talk about. Unfortunately, this week we are not joined by our producer DJ M. He is out having fun in Sandusky, Ohio at Colossal Con, so have good fun. But we're gonna saunter on with sports news as we always do. So here's some of the stuff we missed.
Yeah, we'll talk about the NBA playoffs and the finals a little bit later. But yeah, a lot of stuff happened there. The Stanley Cup playoffs they've reached the finals now. Boston okay. Brewers lead the St. Louis Blues 2-1. If Boston wins, that'll be their third major sports championship in the last calendar year. So
as a city, not for this particular team, but as a city.
Yeah. Only the Celtics, which we talked about their failures. Only the Celtics have screwed up. The Red Sox won the World Series. The Patriots won the Super Bowl. Now the Bruins are ahead in the finals. So everybody root against them. Yeah, and on top of that, the Boston Red Sox owned Liverpool Football Club beat Tottenham in the Champions League yesterday. So more championships for them.
Goodness.
The Chelsea beat Arsenal in the Europa League, and we got the Women's World Cup starting this week, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, I'm excited about the Women's World Cup too, because it seems to have been like a lead up of a little bit of drama, and now that the drama is over, we just get a good fun sport. So that's kind of the part of it. I mean, I'm more excited about than anything else.
Excited about being able to root for an American team in a World Cup.
Yeah,
that's kind of nice. Haven't been able to do that for 4 years now. The men haven't really held up their end of the bargain, and so the Women's World Cup is nice because it's like this is the one we have a chance to win. It's that'll be fun. I guess this is sports news. The Spelling Bee, which was broadcasted by ESPN, ended in an 8-way tie.
So How do you end an 8-way tie?
They ran out of words.
All right.
They have like a list of words. And so this is actually kind of interesting because like they used to, like whenever they ran out of words, they used to award joint championships. And then at some point they came up with a way to like give them a test to whittle down the winners. And they didn't need to use it that year, but they thought it was like too cumbersome and not dramatic enough. So, but this is the first year where, you know, but before when they had ties, it was like two or three spellers that got the title jointly. And this year they're, oh shit, like nobody's dropping out. 'Cause you only drop out when you spell a word wrong. And so it's. Okay. You can't disqualify somebody for getting the word right, but not doing it flashy enough or some other weird criteria. Like the only way you can disqualify somebody is if they get it wrong. And if they don't get any words wrong, then you're stuck with eight competitors that, and they just decided, yeah, we just have eight winners this year. And thankfully they didn't split the prize money eight ways. They just decided to award everybody the full top prize, which I think was $50,000.
Whoa, okay.
So, you know, good for those kids.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe pick some more words next time.
All right, so, hit my mic. We have some other stuff that has kind of been an ongoing thing. We talked about the drama of Echo Fox with one of their investors, making racial remarks against other people in the organization, as well as Rick Fox, the owner of the Echo Fox organization. And we ended up talking about how Rick Fox was going to leave his organization. And we kind of had a follow-up where he said if he could find a way to oust this guy from his position, which we also talked about how hard that would be without certain backers, without either Riot or one of the other big money investors backing a play to help Rick Fox get this guy out of a position that has more power, out of his organization, how it would be difficult for him to be able to do that even as the owner of the organization. So in this follow-up, Riot has now given the Echo Fox organization 60 days to remove. Now, I'm going to mess this guy's name up, so I'm going to let GVZ.
Amit Rezada,
from its ownership group. So this is kind of very big action by Riot to say, like, the things that this guy has done and admitted to. There are things within these storylines that this man has admitted to in using racial slurs against people.
He's gone with the old, it was a heated moment defense. It's not really an excuse, but that's his explanation. And yeah, so that was 60 days as of 18 days ago. So yeah, and this is, like you said, this is one of those things where as an investor or as like an investor group, it's hard to force somebody out. But I think you have a better reason to force somebody out, at least legally, when the whole reason for your existence, this league that you want to participate in, lays down the law and says, you have 60 days to get this guy out, or we are going to reevaluate your future in our league. And so it's kind of, I think the comparison that we brought up was Donald Sterling in the Clippers before. And so in that case, Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, basically suspended Donald Sterling indefinitely. So it's like, so what's the point of owning a team when you can't participate in anything at that point? And so that was sort of the impetus for forcing him to sell the team. Yeah, he still made a lot of money in that transaction. And Amit Rezada, on his way out of this organization, he'll probably have to sell his shares and he will probably make money from it. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. Like, you don't lose money for being racist, but you don't get to participate in this anymore.
Yeah, and it'll hurt future. And if this does work out in a positive light for Rick Fox and Echo Fox, for Rezada, this will hurt future investments he looks to make in esports or any esports organizations, right? And it'll also hurt any kind of business dealings, depending on who they deal with, right? Like, say another team does allow him to invest, but you have maybe a sponsor or maybe another big market investor who then looks at that and looks at who's on your board and looks at who's in your investment pool and goes, oh, you have that guy on your investment board. I don't know if I now am comfortable also investing in this because of who he is, you know what I mean? And drama that he has been attached to in the past. So he now has this black star above his head and above his money, as well. Like, no matter how much he decides to put towards something, and it'll always be something that comes up if he decides to invest in any kind of further esports things in the future.
Yeah. So that's the follow up to the Rick Fox story. It seems like he's going to stay and fight this.
Yeah, there's another follow up ESPN article that talks about how he is willing to actually 100% stick behind his organization and do what he thinks is right.
So I assume this will kind of settle and work itself out. But now that they've got Riot kind of in their corner, then I think they have a lot more legal standing to remove this guy from the organization, or at least, you know, get his, you know, get him to sell his stake in the organization. No, that's not the only controversy that Riot is dealing with right now. There's they had an employee walkout a couple weeks ago over over their handling of sexual harassment and discrimination cases. I can't remember whether we talked about this controversy with them a while back, but there was a very largely publicized stories about their treatment of women within the organization, and because of that, they've had to they've basically had to play PR for the last couple of years, and part of that has been finding a way to handle these cases legally, and their current method of doing that is forced arbitration, which is in general not something that is very well received when it comes to employees and then being forced into that system.
Yeah, so most of what I've read on this situation is it's a lot of corporate mishandling in trying to keep things quiet and keep the public opinion up while also dealing with a situation, because you start with a situation that is brought to you either through HR or other management, and then you, rather than dealing with it right then and there, this person was moved a couple of times, but that doesn't hinder or stop the things that they're doing. It just puts it in a different situation. And then with the forced arbitration, which is essentially closed door meetings, so that as people put it, so that people don't really get in trouble, because then you can't put their names out there. You can't say this person is the person that is causing this issue, which then allows them to go to other places and get jobs, because this stuff happened behind closed doors, which I mean, I'm sure most places and most other organizations would know, but it's in the eyes of public awareness of who this person is and what this person has done, and then if you are forced into a situation to work with this person, a person you should be wary of, and not knowing that, it then causes more problems. So
yeah, it's basically it's at the point where people are talking about it as a cultural issue.
Yeah,
that is across the entire organization, and so once it gets that bad, then it's really bad. And so once it gets that bad, I think employees want to see the company do like make real concrete changes, and you know, maybe not force all of these cases individually into arbitration, which is pretty unfriendly towards. The company has tons of legal resources that they can draw on. Like they have good lawyers. Like companies do, they have the money to do that. Whereas employees generally don't. And so, bringing cases like this into arbitration, usually arbitration arranged by the company, kind of biases all of these decisions towards the company. It prevents employees that have gone through similar things from joining their cases together in class action lawsuits. It kind of discourages if there's like small claims that individually wouldn't necessarily be worth it, but they're systemic across the board. It basically isolates these into a bunch of small individual cases, and it discourages employees from speaking out about this kind of stuff. It seems like Riot wants to, at least they recognize the poor optics of this, and they might eventually want to move away from this, but at least as far as their current cases that are being handled right now, they want to keep that arbitration system in place. And then that's part of what this whole dispute is about. And that's still ongoing. So we'll just have to wait and see how that gets handled. But it sounds like the employees of the company are very much not happy about this. And that includes, some of the more high profile, like TV person.
Yeah, it's that we hard. See
during broadcasts. This is a widespread protest that this also occurred during the mid-season invitational tournament, which was which made quite a bit of news for competitive reasons, and so something like this happening at the same time as that provides a bit of perspective on this whole thing.
Yeah.
So we can move on from that to a wider look at competitive gaming. This article by Kotaku, which is a really long media article. I encourage everybody to read it.
Yeah. Definitely go down into the show notes and read over this Kotaku article, maybe pause the podcast and then come back, because this is a really, really, really deep article.
It basically about all the shady numbers and but behind competitive gaming, and I mean, basically asking the question, is this a bubble? And kind of the obvious answer from the article is yes, but it's like kind of going into detail, just like how many different things are kind of shady. That right now this is an industry that is almost entirely propped up by investor money. I mean, we talk about it a lot. Sometimes we talk about viewership numbers and how, you know, and how popular it's getting. I think it's pretty obvious that competitive gaming is getting more and more popular, but sometimes when they come out and say stuff like, oh, there are more viewers that watch the League of Legends World Championship than watch the Super Bowl, those are kind of bullshit statements, because, you know, the League of Legends World Championship takes place over several weeks. And so like how many of those viewers in your viewership numbers are actual unique viewers, and how many is the same person that's tuned in every day over the course of 21 days.
Right.
Very
conflated, you know, numbers.
Yeah. And on top of that, like how many of those viewers are even real viewers, and how many is due to like you embedded this video across, you've embedded the stream of this match across several different websites, not several, like thousands of different websites. So all of a sudden the viewership numbers jump on Twitch. And so like, what is a real view? What's not a real view? There really is no standard on this stuff yet. So it's kind of the Wild West out there, and the numbers are being reported by the organizations that stand to make that benefit from those numbers being high. So of course they're going to inflate them.
Yeah. A good little bit in this article pretty early on where the article writer kind of says it's like esports. Frank Fields, one of the Coursera sponsor managers, said it's esports is like running a Ponzi scheme at like the highest level. And I kind of agree with that in a lot of lights, right? Because one of the big issues I have a problem with is, especially with the way that Blizzard and Riot handle the oversight of the esports of the games they created, is there seems to be a lot of money that trickles up and not out, right? So there's obviously, for both cases, they have franchised their games, right? So you have to pay to play in this esports league. And we have talked about what these numbers are, what these numbers could be, what they could inflate to. And for some of them, for the Overwatch of what we heard of these numbers, I think they're high. I think they're astronomically high. Yeah, like 20
million, high. I think. And I think that's gone up due to the perceived popularity of the Overwatch League in its first season.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of big dreams for like what this could be.
Yeah.
And as of right now, that's what's getting all this investor money in, is this vision of, you know, giant stadiums of people watching competitive games. Overwatch wants to go as far as, you know, having home stadiums for each team, maybe not necessarily giant ones, but
which I think in the future, depending on how you then do that, could be interesting. But then you talk about in comparison, right? You talk about the revenue stream from streaming, right? So obviously, Riot owns probably a majority of the League of Legends streams that stream official League of Legends matches. So anybody who then they're if using Twitch or even YouTube, who then they're subscribes to that stream, that money also goes to Riot first, with a split going to Twitch or YouTube respectively. And it's not like in something like baseball where you do have official MLB like league on shows on TV, but then you also have, because of the local market, teams that have a revenue share in distribution of showing their games in a local market, right? So obviously, like, New York has the YES Network that shows Yankees games and things like that, and they get a majority of that can then trickle into their organization. There's not going to be much of that happens in esports ever, right? Because you're not gonna let Echo Fox just stream the Echo Fox game, or have Team Liquid stream a Team Liquid game. And yes, there are going to be, because I feel like I have to bring this up, and this is going to be a thing. If anybody ever comments, is there are other revenue streams like teaching. Teaching has kind of become a thing much akin to photography in esports, where you have pro players, and there are more and more of these sites coming along that do almost a because there's no other better word for it at the moment, a master class in how to play the game. And that is becoming a thing that can be a revenue for a player. But right, that's not necessarily a revenue for an organization. And sure, an organization could set something like that up. But right now, the way that works is it's set up through somebody else setting up these websites, getting deals with these players. And most of the time, a lot of these people are going to Twitch streamers who play these games at high levels, and not always necessarily high level pro players. So
yeah, it's almost as if pro players can make money as streamers. They could probably make a lot more money as streamers if they stop playing professionally.
Yeah,
and devote their full time to streaming. So part of why this is such a big bubble is because player salaries are really high, and part of that is because they have this leverage of like, I don't necessarily need this job because I might actually be able to make more just doing this by myself in front of the entire world, and they've got a big enough following that they've developed as a player.
Yeah, some of the clout helps people, and then it gives those people the option to walk away, right? Like, Shroud is one of those people who started as a pro player and sometimes streamer, but as his clout as a player grew, it gave him more options as a streamer. So kind of when there came a moment that he could walk away, he chose to walk away without even thinking about it. And that's always going to be something that really, really good players hold over their organizations, right?
We're starting to get into the range where good players are getting $1 million salaries.
Yeah.
The revenues that teams are getting are kind of in the less than $25 million range.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how close this is money wise. The article basically says that a majority of teams are operating at a loss. The numbers they throw out are, you know, between 50 and 90% or maybe closer to 90% of teams operating at a loss. So when we say like they're basically being propped up by investor money, that's kind of what we mean by that. And yeah. So like if investors for some reason were to decide like, oh, we actually don't want to participate anymore, then this could cause a ripple effect that could cause some of this to collapse.
Because it's hard for to go back to my media example, right? It's hard for an organization to stand out as an organization, right? Because one of the things you want, you don't want to have just a fandom for a player. You want to have a fandom for an organization, right? Because it helps you sell merchandise. It helps you sell any other amount of things that draws revenue to your org, your team, your whatever. For a lot of these esports teams, they're competing in the same market, right? Like you can't have the NBA comparison. And even for Overwatch, I think that is the tout, is like one day you'll have this market that you can directly market to in a city. But at the same time, no matter what, all these Overwatch teams are competing for the same eyes and for the same market share, to sell jerseys, to sell branded keyboards and mice and mouse pads and monitors and computers. You know what I mean? Like, because a lot of those deals are going to be made through the same people and through the same computer manufacturers and hardware manufacturers. So selling your merchandise to viewers is going to mostly come from what people see on the streams, and it's only mostly going to come from the players that they like. So there needs to be some one. I definitely think we need a players union. Most of these competitive gaming leagues don't have any kind of players union. I think as much as people are probably super excited that players are like getting so much money from these teams, I think we need standardized contracts and things like that to help organizations retain more money. I think in some way, shape, or form, I know a lot of esports organizations are now pushing college competitive leagues.
Riot's definitely doing that.
Riot's been doing it. Overwatch has done it a little bit. And I think we need a better way of like kind of rookie contracts versus like vet, you know what I mean? Like the other thing I think has to be very understood is we are still in like the early realm of esports, right? It started a couple years ago with fighting games and StarCraft and other things. But I think we're still really early on. And I think I've touted a lot on this show of how Korea handles things. It looks like, I haven't really delved into it, there is always some bad with the way Korea handles things, but it looks like a lot of the way in which they do things seems right. But this is something that is definitely needs a bigger discussion, and it definitely needs some kind of overview on it, right? Because I've always felt a little weird about the fact that when Riot owns the game, Riot owns the esport, Riot, I think they still make most of the, I'm pretty sure they do, all of the players are Riot employees. So it's just kind of this weird thing. And I wish more of these esports were outsourced, but then I look at something like Counter-Strike, which doesn't necessarily have an overview. So there's all of these tournaments that pop up, and then it makes it harder to watch Counter-Strike because you're watching one tournament and people are like, oh, this is the big tournament to watch. And it's like, oh, this is the first year this tournament has happened. And it necessarily doesn't mean anything. It just means whoever wins gets this trophy and this money. But there is no, like, league standing. But however well a team does kind of goes into what their ranking is compared to other people. And it just is weird because there's no full-on structure that is there, right? Like it's not like a tennis where this then gives them a ranking to that leads to a Worlds at the end of the year or something like that. It's just another tournament on the calendar.
Yeah. I think from this article there's a couple takeaways. One is players do have a lot of power. I'm personally kind of in, like, I'm always hesitant to be like the players need less power when it comes to like, any story, just because it's like you see like how much these leagues can wield their power when the players don't have as much power. But there are ways to kind of handle it sensibly. I don't know if the way this currently exists is not sensible. I think the league maybe just needs to grow up around it and figure out a way to, players have a lot of leverage because, and players have a lot of leverage for a reason that is probably never going to go away. Like these leagues could disappear and some people will still want to watch these players play League of Legends on Twitch and that there's no getting around that. So, whether it's by themselves or as part of a team. And so you're not going to be able to fight that. These players are still going to be able to command money. So you have to find a way to make a profitable organization around that fact that your players have a lot of power. It's something that I wish other leagues would do is, you know, maybe give up a little bit of revenue and, you know, empower their players a little bit more. Otherwise, we'll talk about this later in the show, but otherwise the players are going to start doing things that you don't necessarily expect. The other thing is the going back to the numbers thing, that just we have to find a way to get real numbers out of this and not just numbers reported by the industry. Nielsen organization that they kind of they're known for TV ratings and trying to track viewership on TV, and now they're as since the proliferation of streaming, they've been trying to figure out a way to handle that as well. So they're trying to get in on the esports market and figure out like which views are real views and which are due to the plethora of streams that are just embedded on this cursed network of sites. It's what's real, what's not. What can we actually take to an advertiser? Because right now, like, it's not just that. The issue is that everybody knows that these numbers are inflated. So you take a number to an advertiser, and they know that it's bullshit. So they're not going to want to give you as much money either. because you kind of have your inflation factor that you take, that you apply to these numbers and you take it to them. They have their own mental deflation factor because they know the numbers are bullshit. So it's kind of just this weird chicken game of negotiation. And like once you get real numbers, though, it becomes a little bit harder to argue. And then you have a much stronger foundation for like what to negotiate over. And so right now this is held back by the fact that nobody trusts any numbers that are that are going out right now. Like everybody kind of just has a general feel that this is growing. I mean, you could tell it's popular. Like if you can sell out at a basketball sized arena to watch, you know, a league championship match, like that's, you know, and obviously like the industry has viewers. We just need a better idea of like how many people are watching at home, how many people are actually engaged, how many people are actually viewing these ads, and how many of these people are actually likely to click on them. And
weirdly enough, right, I think one of the things that could then there help in the future is TV, right? And as much as we talk about more of the traditional sports getting away from TV, I think esports going into TV a little bit could be one of those things that helps, because it could give leverage to other revenues of viewership.
Yeah, I think we mentioned like League of Legends is on ESPN Plus now, like in addition to being on Twitch.
Yeah.
So
because
you can kind of anchor, use that ESPN Plus number as an anchor, because you can't really fake that as much as you can fake, you know, we're just going to embed this Twitch stream on so many different sites that it looks like there's 300,000 viewers when there's only like 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think maybe even getting to a point where maybe different streaming services that come along are also allowed to maybe stream these games, right? And then that comes on the having deals with Twitch that are, you know, exclusives or whatever deals you have with YouTube, which is something a lot of Counter-Strike things have delved into, right? They have deals with YouTube, so their games stream there, but then they're not on Twitch or they're not on whatever other platform. And I think it gives, I don't know, I think those are the things that also need to be worked on and talked about, is these exclusivity rights of streaming, because there's only two big platforms to stream to. And so I think that's something that needs to be maybe gotten away from a little bit as well.
Yeah. I do want to go back. Sorry, this is going to be kind of jarring, but I do want to go back to your point about, you know, about the comparison with the NBA and player power.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that, like, I think one of the more interesting comparisons that you could possibly make is LeBron James.
Yeah.
Because one thing that the NBA saw this year is, as LeBron James moved from an Eastern Conference team, a team in the Eastern time zone, the Cleveland Cavaliers, to Los Angeles, a team in Pacific time, ratings went down like across the board, like all season. And that was, you know, and that was an effect that was largely attributed to LeBron James having this effect that, like, now he's on the West Coast. Now these games are late for the Eastern half of the United States, which is still the majority of the viewership in the NBA. You know, now it's too late for those people to watch, and you know, he is a phenomenon on his own. It, you know, he brings the circus with him, as we've talked about at length. But you know, having that kind of personality, just shifting teams, has that large of an effect on ratings.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's like we've got competitive gaming growing with a lot of personalities like that. There's I'm not entirely sure the point I'm trying to make, but it'll be interesting to watch all of these leagues grow around, you know, maybe, you know, 10 LeBrons in the league instead of just one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anybody is on the same level, but it's interesting to see like what's going to happen as, you know, as certain players decide that, you know what, I don't really feel like being part of a team anymore. I think I'm just going to stream full time, and what effect that's going to have on viewership, what mm-hmm. effect it's going to have on a league as it grows. It's, you know, it maybe raises the question if some of these players are leaving because they can't find spots on teams, then, you know, maybe should the league expand to keep these personalities involved? Is that going to cause them to lose more money? Just a whole bunch of different questions. But read that article. They explain all of this a lot better than us jumping around and picking and using bits and pieces of it. But it's, they've got to find a way to make like real concrete revenue streams and not just speculative investor money, because eventually that money is going to dry up. And they're going to want to see like real returns on their investments. They invest in the hope that they get money in return eventually. And everybody knows that eventually this industry is going to grow. Who knows how big it's going to grow.
But it's also, if the money stays insulary, then does it just cause it to explode because people are land grabbing at the money that is there now rather than, you know, doing the things that are proper to help the league grow? And that is the danger. The danger is greed stifling the growth of this industry rather than helping it. So that's kind of one of the big takes I would love people to go read this and take away from and have a bigger discussion on all of these things, because it's one of the things that I think is really, really, really potentially toxic to esports and competitive gaming overall. So yeah, there's that. Let's move on to some baseball news. Great baseball news, but news all the same.
Yeah, I could tell you that, like, however low esports viewership numbers might be, they are not as low as the attendance for the Tampa Bay Rays in last Tuesday's win over the Blue Jays. That was 5,786 people mm-hmm. in a stadium, Tropicana Field, that has the capacity for 42,735 people. So,
is there any particular thought or theory as to why it was so low?
So Tampa in general has issues with getting people to show up to sporting events.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know how much of that is, like, I don't think you can blame a lot of that on the citizens of Tampa. They've had a lot of bad teams. You know, like, they won the Super Bowl once with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then a lot of bad years. I think the Rays, they've recently done okay, but before that, I think since their expansion year, they went through, like, over a decade of sadness. And so, that's not great for bringing in a bunch of loyal fans. You kind of have to have a sustained period of success, and then that's when you get people that are willing to put up with the years of sadness because they've experienced some of that success. If you just suck all the time, there's no loyalty. There's no, like, you don't ingrain yourself in the community. So I think that might be part of the explanation as far as like what the hell happened for this one particular game. Nobody really knows. This is a record for the lowest attendance in Blue Jays history. It's kind of hard to find stats for like the lowest attendance in like MLB history, just because over the growth of the sport, you see a lot of small numbers. For a sport that's been around for, you know, over a century, but at least as far as the 22 years that the Tampa Bay Rays have been in existence, going back to when they were the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, this 5,786 number is the lowest. It's lower than their previous record was 6,509, and that was when a hurricane was about to hit. So this is lower than that, and I don't want to say nobody can really explain why, but like I don't think there's any, you're pointing to any one particular theory. The Rays don't even have the lowest average attendance in baseball in general. That mm-hmm. belongs to the Marlins, and we've talked at length about why that is. It's sad to see. It's sad when you see like pictures, and you know, when you see like posts, social media posts, especially by the team, of like, hey, here's this clip from this game, or you know, here's a photo from this game, and like they're trying to promote this event, and there's like you can see like five people in a section. The seats are blue, and you look out and you just see a lot of blue out there, and that's awful to see, and it kind of makes me wonder like why, like if I owned a team, I would be so embarrassed by that I would just drastically cut ticket prices.
Went and looked at ticket prices. Like the lowest average ticket price you could get is about $20 for relatively good seats. And as high as like $130 for like some party rows or things like that. But the average ticket price doesn't seem terrible to me. But
even then, if your attendance drops to the point where you're filling like a quarter to a third of your stadium on a regular basis, I think like that's one of those times where you should be like, maybe we drop this to like $2 to $5 mm-hmm. or so. Like at that point, like you get enough people in the building and maybe they might buy some stuff, and that'll make up for the revenue. And like, that's gotta be better than them just not being there at all. Whenever I see stuff like this, it makes me feel like it's not just about how bad the team is. Because I don't think the Rays are that bad anyways. But it's like, at that point, there's other reasons. There's underlying business reasons. There's mistrust between the fans and the organization. There's, you know, like anytime a team has to move cities because attendance is low, I would almost always bet that attendance is low not because the fans just don't like going to games. It's that there's other underlying reasons, and it's like the team needs to be more creative about getting people in. You know, this is a traditional institution. This is not competitive gaming. This isn't a new thing that you have to try to convince people to do. Like, baseball is an institution. It's existed for a long time. The appeal of going to a baseball game, at least to me, should not be something that changes drastically from... I don't know. Like, it's like they should be able to be... to draw more fans than this. It's embarrassing.
It is. Like, I agree with you. But it definitely is one of those things. It's hard to fathom what they can do when the city you're in just doesn't believe in you.
And yeah, like eventually you gotta find ways to get them to believe in you. But like, it's, I don't know, like when you're in a city as big as Tampa, there should be enough people. Like if you lower ticket prices, if you do something,
more giveaways, maybe
dollar beer night.
Yeah. Like, dollar beer night. You just maybe lose somewhere else, but you gain, you know what I mean? So you lower ticket prices, or maybe you keep ticket prices about the same and about average. And then what you do is you do the dollar beers, or you do a free hot dog, or you do something that gets people there. The biggest thing is to obviously win games, right? Because that's always going to make people pay attention to you if you're winning. But I think in the meantime, between doing that, there are other things you have to do that are getting people in the doors. And I agree with that.
Yeah. The Rays are second in the AL East. They're 2.5 games behind the Yankees. Like, this is like, mm-hmm. they are winning games. So it's like, it shouldn't be this bad. And,
no.
But like, you can't look at it year, like, you know, this year they're good and then the fans didn't show up. Like, you can't just look at it one year like that. I think there's like a larger sample size and a larger history going on here. Like, I think if they're, you know, if they're good for several years and they still have trouble drawing fans, and like, I don't mean like the Marlins, you win a World Series like once every 10 years and then suck for the other nine. Like, that doesn't work either. But like, you have to have, I think, sustained success and then sustained like engagement with the community. And, you know, like, it's, if you have success and nobody's there to see it because everybody's priced out, or because your stadium sucks and nobody wants to go, or because you got traffic issues getting to the stadium or something, like, it could be anything. It's just like, you got to do better than that. I think it's, otherwise, yeah, this is just, it's embarrassing. Do better, Rays. Because otherwise, if people start seeing that and people start feeling like maybe Major League Baseball isn't necessarily the best avenue for them to go down, they'll start doing things like what Connor Stewart did, who was a prospect drafted by the Braves last year. They tried to lowball him because he had an injury. And so he said, instead of like re-entering the draft, he said, fuck you guys, I'm going to sign in Japan. And the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks of the Pacific League in Japan offered him $7 million over 6 years, which is more than what he would have made as a minor league prospect over the same amount of time. I think stuff like this is really worrying for Major League Baseball.
We've seen cases of this in football and in basketball, especially of guys going over to the European League. And sometimes those guys come back, sometimes they don't, right? But you have a bigger prospect pool, obviously, to choose from, generally.
And for basketball, that's because they're not allowed to play in the NBA when they're 18. But for baseball, it's, you know, it comes down to they're not paying their prospects enough. So when they, like, their Major League Baseball is being out-competed financially by a league that should not be able to out-compete them. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say, like, in general, this is like the first of these cases, which is why this is such a big deal. But it's, you know, that this is a high-level prospect chose, instead of playing in the minor league system, to go play somewhere else, to go play baseball somewhere else. We already talked about Kyler Murray deciding he's not going to play baseball, he's going to play football instead. And that worked out for him because he got drafted number one overall and made a shit and is going to make a shit ton of money playing football. But in this case, this is a baseball player. He's not holding another sport as leverage. He's just playing baseball.
Yeah.
And he's just going to go do it somewhere else that's willing to pay him more than what an American team, the American team that drafted him was willing to pay him. And that
is something that then can become more of an issue, right? You already have the issue of the double athlete coming out of college, right? So now this person is going to be paraded over by two different sports. And if the other sport has more pulling power, they're always going to win. So now you come down to the hardcore baseball prospect. Now, if you have to then compete with other leagues in different countries who are willing to pay them that much extra or that little bit extra to get them to also come to their country and play in their league, that's now something else you have to deal with in losing more value prospects for your sport.
Yeah, and so we are talking about this from an American-centric viewpoint. Like, maybe this is better as, you know, for baseball overall as a worldwide sport to see that a league outside of the U.S. is strong enough that they can do this kind of thing, that they can poach players from the United States. Having strong leagues everywhere might be better for the popularity of the sport in general, but when it comes to the revenue for Major League Baseball, maybe that's not so good. I also, you know, with how much we've harped on minor league salaries and the fact that those guys aren't getting there's no minimum salary, so those guys are getting paid, you know, not enough to make a living wage. I don't think Carter Stewart was at that level, but I mean, the bottom level pulls everything down with it.
Yeah.
So just like a higher minimum salary would push up all the other salaries. The lack of a minimum salary pulls down everything else. Carter Stewart's set himself up pretty well here, because he now gets paid a little bit more money to go showcase his talents overseas, in a professional league that is, I think the quality of the professional league in Japan is better than the lower leagues in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen a ton of Japanese athletes make the transition to Major League Baseball and do just fine. So he gets to showcase his talents there, and he's going to be 25 years old when he's a free agent. And he's not going to have to deal with any of this arbitration bullshit that Major League Baseball players have to deal with. He's not going to have to deal with teams manipulating his service time. We've seen teams do that at length to, you know, players like, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and other big names that become superstars in the minor leagues because they get stuck there because the teams won't call them up because they want to manipulate their salary lengths and delay when they hit free agency. He's not going to have to deal with any of that. He's going to be 25 years old. He's going to be a free agent. And at that point, he'll be free to negotiate with MLB teams. If he's good, they'll be, you know, falling over themselves to try to bid for his services. This is going to be a 6-year process for him, but if even the floor for this decision for him is higher because he's making more money doing this than he would in the minor league system on a best case scenario. So it almost seems like this is a no-brainer for players. If money is your only factor, you do have to move overseas.
Yeah.
But Japan's not the worst place to move to. It's financially, this seems like a no-brainer decision. And you, as a league, Major League Baseball, you do not want people to look at this and see that this is a no-brainer decision to not play in Major League Baseball. Like, that's like, once you see something like this, I feel like you have to make big adjustments. You have to get it so that people that are within your minor league system, the players, the lifeblood of your sport, can make enough money at least to live. And if they're good prospects, can make good money, so that other leagues elsewhere don't poach them. So yeah, it's embarrassing. It's two embarrassing stories for baseball.
I mean, it is, right? Because you're trying to play this nickel and dime game for whatever reason you have. These are things you're going to have to deal with, and these are the repercussions of that. And if he does show out as being a really good player and then stands out in Japan as well, this is going to make other players who probably don't have as much skill as him, but do have that as an option, go, you know what? Why not make that an option for me? Why isn't that an option? I could go play in Japan. Korea also has a pretty big baseball culture as well that might even look to bring in American players, right? Because we've definitely taken players from both Japan and Korea. So now this is a thing that could show itself as going the other way. All right, so let's finally get to our NBA roundup news. Let's start off with a little bit of the draft and the chaoticness of that.
Yeah, we had talked before about how like they've messed with the draft lottery system. They changed up the odds to change the number of teams that were being drawn from three teams to four, just all in an effort to reduce the incentive to tank. This year we kind of had the biggest incentive to tank in a long time with Zion Williamson entering the draft. But despite that, the team with the best odds, the New York Knicks, had the highest chance, which was still only like a 15% chance to be drafted with, or to be drawn for the number one overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds are kind of flattened. And now if you're really, really bad, if you're the worst team in the league, there's still a higher chance that you're going to miss out on that overall pick than there is that you're going to get it. So it almost feels like they wanted to randomize this more. That way you can't just
plan
to suck.
Yeah.
you do still have an incentive to suck more than everybody else sucks, but you don't have any idea where you're going to end up at this point. And that's how the lottery actually played out. It was chaos. Before three teams were drawn, and usually two of those three teams would be teams that were already bottom three teams, and then maybe somebody from later in the lottery with worse odds ended up jumping into the top three. This year, three out of the four teams that were drawn came from outside the top three, I believe. And the New York Knicks, who were hoping to get the number one overall pick, they ended up at three. Mm-hmm. Number one went to New Orleans, who we've talked at length about them potentially losing Anthony Davis. There was talk that if the Knicks got the number one overall pick, they were going to try to trade it for Anthony Davis. So they failed on that front as well. To say failed is kind of weird, just because it's
random. It's lottery.
Yeah,
it's gambling.
The Pelicans had a 6% chance of getting the number one overall pick. They hit on that. The Memphis Grizzlies also jumped. And both those teams, I think, jumped six slots.
Mm-hmm.
To get to number one and number two, respectively. And the Knicks dropped two slots to get to number three. The Lakers were the fourth team there. They jumped seven slots. from, I think, number 11 or 12.
Okay.
And, you know, all the way up to 4. So, like, that's a pretty big jump for them. Kind of a silver lining on chaotic offseason,
yeah.
Which I, so much has happened that I forgot to include the Lakers clusterfuck in the notes here. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of shenanigans going on with Magic Johnson coming back on TV and firing shots at people within, or not people, at Rob Pelinka specifically within the Lakers organization. It's chaos over there, but they got the number four pick, so
yeah.
They can add a pretty good
value for them.
Yeah. Yeah, or they could trade it away. They could potentially include it as in an Anthony Davis deal.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is hoping that we got the number one pick. Hey, Anthony Davis, maybe you might want to stay because we got a pretty, like, with you here and another number one overall pick, like, we might be able to start winning here.
Mm-hmm.
But they do still have him under contract for one full season. So they have a little bit of leverage. I mean, just the fact that they're not desperate to get a high pick anymore because they have the highest pick you can get. They have Zion Williamson at this point. They don't have to be desperate about, you know, trying to trade for more picks. So it's, you know, New Orleans definitely won out here. And
yeah.
And I think if you're one of those people that's like, oh man, New Orleans is totally getting screwed over this whole Anthony Davis situation, this is kind of karmic retribution for all of that. But yeah, overall, I think the lottery achieved its goals of
being more random.
Random and, you know, teams not being able to plan out.
Yeah, because one of my
strategy behind sucking
is I was very highly upset with the reaction that a lot of New York fans had, especially on Twitter and some on TV, about a fucking random odds game. Like, it's random odds. Yes, you have the highest percentage odds to win, but that doesn't mean shit in the end of the day. And you could sit there and you could be angry all you want, but it is literally a gamble. And
getting mad at a slot machine.
Yeah. You got to reform and refocus.
Well, I think a lot of the anger around the New York area, and you're closer to this, so maybe you can verify that. But I think a lot of the anger is centered more on the organization itself.
Mm-hmm.
That, like,
but see,
okay, we suck this bad to try to get something out of this, and so we got nothing out of this. So your strategy sucked.
Yeah, but my thing here on this show has always been blaming the Knicks organization. I feel like a number of times we have had the players and squandered them, and I felt like having the number one pick here wasn't going to all of a sudden change all of that. I think as an organization, we have been doing bad by the players that we have gotten, and we have not done the due diligence to make them look good or help them in any way look good. We just keep throwing a bunch of names at the board and hoping that it'll stick. And this was yet another thing in that, right? As a fandom of New York, it was another thing thrown at the board, another name, Zion Williamson, thrown at the board that is going to all of a sudden save the New York Knicks organization. No, this is a inward out thing. Like, we need to fix the foundation of what this organization is, because it has looked like nothing but shitty name grabs and like from our coaching staff to our players. It is just like, look who we have now, and it turns out to mean nothing. You know what I mean? Like, because it is an organization that lives on its media reputation more than anything else. It no longer seems like the people there care about basketball anymore to me than, you know, than they did when the organization meant something and it was trying. Like, there have been New York Knicks teams where, and a lot of the Patrick Ewing-led teams where I watched those teams lose, but fuck if I didn't feel like they were trying to win.
Yeah.
You know, like all around trying to actually win. But yeah. Now I look at those teams and I don't get that feeling.
It's like, you certainly can't be mad at the NBA for this because it's a random thing. It's not rigged. If they could rig it, they absolutely would rig it towards to get the most coveted draft prospect in over a decade to the largest market in the nation. That would be, you know, instead he went to New Orleans, which is one of the smallest, and you know, and then Memphis got the second pick, and you know, they're also a small market as well. Like you said, like you gotta have a better plan than at least a better overall plan than hope your gambling works out.
Yeah. Because one of the other things that we talked about is one of the other big New York plans is to get Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant, right? Or both. And we talked about how specifically Kyrie and Kevin Durant are not people who do great in those kind of media circuses. But people are like, oh, but if we get bullshit, you know what I mean? Like, look what we've done to other players who don't do well in media circuses, like Carmelo Anthony or anyone else. They come here, they make all these touts of how they're going to be the thing that turns around New York. And then it doesn't mean anything, right? It's just all fluff. And yeah, it happens in other places and at other teams, but like, it has happened a lot here. And to a point where I'm starting to be like, maybe it's a them and not an us thing.
Yeah, I mean, Brooklyn is doing pretty well. That's, you know, and they made one of the worst trades, possibly the worst trade in the history of NBA trades. They completely screwed up their team for a half a decade, and they still managed to rebuild before the New York Knicks did. And
right,
that's, you know, that's it's an organizational thing. It's definitely not a city thing. It's, you know, the city's big enough that there will be people that will want to go to games. There will certainly be enough Knicks fans to, like, the Knicks are the most valuable organization in American sports, maybe in sports worldwide. And it's, but they still can't figure out how to get a good product on the floor without relying on gambling.
Yeah.
So it just, a result like this is just more embarrassing for them, just because it shows that, like, you threw all your chips at getting this one guy that, like, you had, like, 15% chance of getting. And
I also wish we would stop like hoping on getting guys who are like already proven themselves or at the tail ends of like their greatness. Like, Carmelo was like already not the best when we got him, and now we're talking about getting guys who are already tailing off, like KD or Anthony Davis. Like, I mean, Anthony Davis isn't really tailing off. I think he's just been
is Durant, but like Kyrie Irving, maybe. Like,
yeah. I just mean more for Durant tailing off, and like, he's not the biggest name even in the system he's in right now, right?
But you might not get him during his best years either. Like, he might be peaking now, and so you'll get the second half of his career.
Yeah. Like, I just wish we could get some fucking no name somebody that like had research behind them and people doubted and then shows out, right? And then now we start putting pieces around that. And
that's essentially what the Nets did. That's what they had to do for so many years, because they couldn't get anybody else, because they sucked so badly because of that one fateful decision they made. And but yet you know, now they're back in the playoffs. Now they've got a good young team that the city, at least the loyal fans that stuck with the Nets, they've grown up with this team of players that they've gotten to know, that they've seen grow. And mm-hmm. then they added D'Angelo Russell on top of that, who was, you know, this cast off from the Lakers. And so he had something to prove, and the city got behind that. It's that kind of thing that can get a city to embrace a team, that process, where the Knicks, they're hoping to just get mercenaries that the city will then get excited about. And I don't think that's there's no guarantee that those mercenaries are going to want to play for you, because you haven't established any you know, any path to success. You don't seem like you have a plan other than get mercenaries or hope that the gambling works out in your fashion.
Could we just trade everything and get Jimmy Butler? Because I know people always talk about, like, the media circus that is New York. One, I think Jimmy Butler could handle the media circus perfectly fine, but
he could counter circus.
Yeah. I just think he would be the player that people wouldn't necessarily look at as like, oh yeah. They'd just be like, okay, who else are we getting, right? Because you would think you'd pair Jimmy Butler up with somebody, but I would just love to get Jimmy Butler and then build a system around Jimmy Butler. Like, or something like that. Just fucking, I don't care. Just do something else. I'm tired of hearing the same names. I just want something different. I just want fucking go after fucking, like, the eighth man on a bench somewhere. Like, just give me something different. That's all I want and need.
Somebody that can establish an identity as a New York Knick instead of somebody that's already made a name somewhere else and
yeah,
now wants to cash in on that by being in New York.
Yeah. Like, just please give me anything else. Like, just anything else. Like, even our coaches have been coaches. Like the last few coaches we've had have been secondhand coaches that have built their name somewhere else and then came to New York. And I'm over it. I'm so over all of it.
All right.
Playoff news. So
let's move on to the good teams. The Warriors swept the Blazers in four games. So they're in the finals, as yeah. we expected. You know, they did that without Kevin Durant. Four close games, but they managed to make it work. And they got to rest a little bit. The Toronto Raptors came back from down 0-2 to the Milwaukee Bucks. And so the Raptors are in the finals now. So we've got basically this matchup of the Raptors, I think, are kind of a great story. They had a strong foundation to begin with. They took a gamble in trading their iconic player DeMar DeRozan in the hopes that they got an even better player in Kawhi Leonard, even though they only get him for one full season before he's a free agent. But they made that gamble, and it's paying off.
No, it's paying Kawhi off leaps Leonard. And bounds for them. Yeah. This is the kind of thing I'm talking about. Well, yeah, no, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about, right? You make this gamble on a player that you built up in someone like DeMar DeRozan and has carried and put Toronto on his back more than a few times for somebody who was looking for an opportunity to do that, right? To not live in the shadow of what came before him, but to have a team and be able to put it on his back in that kind of way. And it worked out. I think it worked out well for both sides. Very oddly.
Yeah. For Kawhi Leonard, I'm really, really enjoying kind of, I find it weird calling it a redemption arc, because mm-hmm. he didn't necessarily, like, you could argue that that he kind of caused a circus by being out almost all of last season. All this confusion over, you know, whether his injury was misdiagnosed or all that, and or whether his injury was just a mental thing. But now he's back. Now he's been gone for such a long time that it's almost like we got used to what the league was like without Kawhi Leonard. But now that he's back, it's like, holy shit, we missed out on all of this last year. And he played amazing all year, and he's played even better in the playoffs. And, you know, he put the Raptors on his back. I don't think we even talked about the game-winning Game 7 shot that he hit, which, against the Philadelphia 76ers, to eliminate them and bring the Raptors to the Eastern Conference Finals, because that on its own might be the most iconic moment in Toronto Raptors history. So, like, to bring in this guy who, like, for all intents and purposes, is a mercenary for, you know, 1 year, and who knows what he's going to do next year. Or who knows what he's going to do in the off season, but they brought him in, and he's put the team on his back. He's become, like, even if he leaves after this year, he's ingrained himself enough in the Toronto community and in the team as an iconic player that he will be a Toronto legend, even if he's only played with them for a year. He's brought them to heights that they have never achieved before. Part of that, obviously, is LeBron's no longer in the East, so all of a sudden, like, the East is wide open. This is a lot more exciting. But still, like, you know, that Game 7 shot, that shot of, you know, he shoots the fadeaway and that ball hits the rim and it bounces four times on that rim, and the entire arena is holding its breath waiting to see what's going to happen. And then that ball falls in and everybody explodes. Like it's moments like that that make sports great. And it's moments like that that fans in Toronto will remember forever. So now if Kawhi Leonard can help take down the Warriors juggernaut that we've talked all year about how impossible it is going to be to beat this Warriors team, but maybe without Kevin Durant, who's been injured for the last, you know, six games or so for the Warriors, maybe without Kevin Durant, they have a shot. And the Raptors took their opportunity. They won game one. Kevin Durant's going to miss game two. That game's going to happen later today. We've talked about how impossible this Warriors team is to beat. They've got five all-stars in the starting lineup, but Kevin Durant is a crucial piece of that lineup. I know we talked about, oh, maybe they are better without him, but he does take a lot of pressure off of the other players. And so I think game one, we saw how tough it is for them to go up against another really, really good team without having one of your two best players.
Yeah.
Even though your other players are still phenomenal. DeMarcus Cousins is back, by the way. So they do still have four out of their five all-stars in the lineup. Cousins is kind of hobbled, so maybe it's like three and a half, but you know, Kevin Durant was a crucial piece of that. And, If you put Kevin Durant in the lineup, then all of a sudden Kawhi Leonard has to guard Kevin Durant, and then he can't go and shut down anybody else. If Kawhi Leonard can do that, Kawhi Leonard could retire. He could do whatever. He could, like, they would build a statue for him if they took down this Warriors team. Like, for a guy who played for your team for 1 year, they would build a statue for him. That is how much of an effect he is having on this. I'm just really glad that he's back in the league, that he's undergoing this redemption timeline. It's this is one of my favorite stories to happen in the NBA in a long time.
I mean, even we kind of a little bit touted him as a bad guy for the way he was trying to get out of the Spurs. You know,
and yeah, it's you know, because we, you know, that there is that confusion, like, is this injury that he has, is it just a mental thing? Is it actually a physical thing? Is it, you know, like, what's stopping him from playing? And we didn't know. And then, so, and part of that was just how he handled his trade demands as well. And part of that is declaring that he wanted to go to Los Angeles, which in general, like, the same thing with Anthony Davis, like, as soon as you declare you want to go to Los Angeles, then that just raises the level of hatred. Mm-hmm. Because now you're participating in this Lakers circus. You're participating in, it's assumed that it's a Lakers circus. But even though there is another team in LA, so a lot of that just comes from, I hope he doesn't go to LA, or I hope he doesn't go to the Lakers. But he's, you know, he's not there. He's playing for a different team, and he is playing out of his mind. He could have just phoned it in this year.
And he could have
prepared for free agency, but instead he is taking his 1 year. He's living his life to the fullest for this 1 year. In a way you could say he's doing his job, but he's doing more than you would have expected him to do, for a guy who might not be there after this year. If he's going to go, he's going to go out with a bang. And that's awesome to see. It's awesome to see out of a player that you thought of as one of the best in the league. And now this performance has raised the question of, is Kawhi Leonard the best player in the league right now?
Yeah. And speaking of LA and the teams in LA, the Clippers were fined $50,000 for tampering after Doc Rivers gave some praise and credit to Kawhi Leonard.
That's how good he is. That people are already getting fined talking about how good he is. I believe the comments were comparing Kawhi Leonard to Michael Jordan. So that's the kind of praise he's getting. That's the kind of praise that triggers fines for other teams for talking about him. The official stance is that Doc Rivers should have said that he's not allowed to talk about Kawhi Leonard and how good he is. Which I don't know. That's like, don't bring him on the show if that's the case. But like, yeah, this whole thing is kind of weird. But like, that's the kind of aura that is now surrounding this player that last year was not playing at all. So it's good to have him back. It's almost like we, you know, missing LeBron in the playoffs. Like, that kind of sucks, not having him around, not having that.
Does it circus though?
That's I don't know. I go back, like, and forth on this, because it instantly made the Eastern Conference playoffs mean something to not have him around.
Yeah.
It's so much nicer to see a competitive Eastern Conference.
I just feel like we got more story overall, right?
Yes, than we did.
Did LeBron win? Did LeBron lose? Was it LeBron's fault? Was it his teammates' fault? You know what I mean? Like that story gets tired.
That did get old.
I loved the back and forth of what the Houston Rockets are supposed to do versus the Warriors. I loved that. I loved talking about the fucking Bucks. You know what I mean? Like we got to talk about the Bucks. How many times do we get to talk about the Bucks other than fucking, you know, players leaving the Bucks? I don't know. There was just more to actually talk about.
Yeah, and the Bucks and the Raptors had the best record in the East this year, actually they both have a better record than the Warriors, but like say LeBron was still in the East and he was on the third place team, there would still be an expectation that LeBron's team is going to win,
right,
and beat those two other teams. So it's almost like we don't care about the rest of the playoffs. Boston was kind of the heir apparent this year because they did so well last year and they had such high expectations, and then they floundered against.
Yeah, but that's because of how, you know what I mean? Like, that's because of how well they did the previous year. So that's a continuing storyline. Whereas, like, no matter what, right, even after this year, if the Lakers with LeBron make it to the playoffs, it's going to be, well, is LeBron going to win? It's LeBron James. He should. Like no matter what. And that's the thing that it gets tiring, and I think sometimes it makes basketball boring when you're talking about the same, you're changing team names and sometimes other things, but the one thing stays consistent and it's the only thing you talk about, kind of makes it boring, you know, and it just you tune out at a certain point.
It's nice to take a break from that, and I the point I was trying to make is that it's nice to have replaced that sort of magnetism with another guy, Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
It kind of left a vacuum, but Kawhi Leonard has filled it admirably, and he filled it in a way that is far less annoying. And so that's been fun to watch. I've talked all year about just how the NBA, like, the NBA is exciting until you get to the finals. Then the Warriors are just going to stomp over everybody. But I'm excited about this. Like, I'm excited about the Raptors being up 1-0. This has gotten so exciting that I'm backtracking away from the Warriors are just going to stomp everything. Like, I'm excited about the finals now. The ending of this NBA season is fun. It's not as boring as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, because for me, and this is more in other media outlets, like, and some of their personalities, specifically one, those previous, especially those LeBron years, right? Even if the finals came down to two teams that weren't a LeBron team, the storyline was still what LeBron should have done to be there, right? Or yeah. and how he failed.
And that hasn't happened in 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was like you couldn't get away from it. And now we're in this point where it's like, okay, you have this giant that is the Warriors, and the Rockets are designed to defeat them. They don't do their job, but oh my God, you have Kawhi Leonard who is doing things that nobody expected him. You know, like, the storylines are
the unexpected
vast
savior.
Yeah, and the storylines are vast and they're different, and there's other things going on, and you're just the fact that, like, and I keep bringing this up, we got to talk about the Bucks, like, and who they were and what they were doing and how well they were playing basketball as a team, and like this team of players that didn't look like they should fit together but were working together really well. And I still think the Bucks are a big competitor coming into next season as well. I don't know, it just made it a really fun year to pay attention to basketball to me.
All right, well, thanks for paying attention to basketball along with us. Thanks for paying attention to this show. That wraps up this week's episode of Sports Odds and Ends. Head on over to sportsoddsandends.com to find show notes. Definitely check out that esports article and all the other articles that we'll put in the show notes. If you want to talk to us, I'm at JVZ on Twitter. Kaz is at King Kaz. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks.